This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Buying a home in today's market can be overwhelming. Luckily, Navy Federal Credit Union's new home buying center has everything you need. With services like verified pre-approval, which shows sellers you're a serious buyer, you have a competitive advantage when making an offer. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA. Equal housing lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval. Call 1-888-842-6328 for details about credit costs.
State Farm and DJ Dramos from Life as a Gringo know making smarter financial moves today secures your financial freedom for a successful tomorrow.
Now we have a level of privilege that our parents never had. So what do we do with it, right? How do we utilize the opportunities that we have that they don't, right? And a lot of that is educating ourselves on how to not make the same mistakes they did.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm, proud sponsor of My Cultura Podcast Network.
Is getting gas at Chevron burning a hole in your wallet? What if I told you can easily earn cash back while you fill up? Introducing Drop, the app that turns every fill up into a reward. With Drop, you'll earn points to get free gift cards every time you fill up your tank. Download Drop and use code DROP77 to instantly receive $5 in points to jumpstart your savings journey. Don't miss out on turning your gas expenses into something rewarding.
You're listening to Studio 22.
I think more people could benefit from creative writing just in any form, even if they don't publish or for show anyone, you know,
just some kind of outlet.
Yeah.
Were you doing like pen to paper, or was it kind of a mix
all
of
pen to paper?
Yeah, dude, I love that, bro.
That's the only way I work. Like, I can pawn laptops, but I never, like, I skipped that era. I went from like skating my whole life to, at the end of 16, full-blown heroin addict. So I skipped that era of like school and learning how to like type. And so even till today, I don't email. I got my first ever laptop during the beginning of COVID.
Oh, wow.
And I used it maybe six times and have since given it away. And if I have a long, I prefer to talk.
Yeah,
instant gratification and we get right to the point.
Absolutely.
But if I have a long thing to type out, I pen and paper it, I take a picture, and then I'll just text it to you.
That's awesome, bro.
Yeah. Amazing.
People look at me like, how the fuck have you made it this far in life? Or they're like, that's admirable.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, bro.
Oh, for sure.
It's different though too, man. I just feel more connected when I'm writing pen to paper, and then my memory's better with what I'm writing, and it's, I don't know, it's a different feeling.
Yeah, it is. I'm also a reader. Like I like books.
Yeah.
Physical Same. Books. I don't like Kindle, or I like the physical act of holding a book and cracking it.
Turn the
Do you
paper.
Read any sci-fi?
No.
Oh,
it's just not my deal.
Yeah,
you know, I respect it. I think it's really entertaining, but it's like, it just doesn't
grab me. You can't really
get
into it.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
I like autobiographies.
Yep.
I like, like real.
Yeah.
Like generally about drugs and drug addicts.
Yeah.
People who've struggled.
Anthony Kiedis's?
Love it.
That's one of my favorite books.
He dedicated his book, that book, Scar Tissue, to Bill Wilson, which is the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous.
No way.
Oh, wow.
So no one would really know that.
Wow.
But it's like, and I didn't realize it until after I read it later. Once I got sober, I looked at it and I'm like, dude, it's dedicated to Bill W.
Yeah.
And in our world, that's like,
damn.
It's like God to a holy goer.
Right. 100%.
That's awesome, dude. So what are some of your, cause I like the self-help books. I like the ones that help me grow as a person.
Totally. You know?
I grew up in a lot of like struggle with my family too, and kind of figuring shit out and kind of learning how to fuck myself, I guess, basically.
Sure.
And so I've always gravitated towards that, but hearing your story, and there's a lot of addiction in my family as well, and I've been witness to a lot of it. Never went down that path myself, but for my own reasons. But I've been around it my whole life, you know. So hearing what you're into, it's also something that's exciting for me, because I can like pass it on to my family, you know, and friends as well.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And that's kind of the way I believe it's passed along, you know, through people that do it in a way that makes it like, you know, attractive enough to make others believe like, hey, maybe that is worth giving it a go. And that happened to me by virtue of a book, A Million Little Pieces, James Frey. Wow. Familiar? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
When he wrote A Million Little Pieces, it was like a fucking blockbuster, like killing. And he made it on Oprah's book club.
Wow.
And he went on Oprah's book club, did the deal. She's praising the book. And then a little bit later down the road, I guess there were some discrepancies within his book that people were saying were fraudulent.
Oh, damn.
And then he had to go back on Oprah and she like called him. It was this really fucked up, convoluted thing.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that book was given to me by a dear friend of mine, Ryan Kingman. Kingman was the team captain of Element Skateboards.
Oh, dope.
So when when he was TMing Element and all the skaters would be on tour, skating, acting crazy, and he passed me this book. And again, anything with drugs and just derelicts and discreet, you know, just that world I'm into. And I got into the book and I loved it. And I then later decided that I was going to write a book. And I didn't even decide. It was kind of an ultimatum given to me by Bam in order to live in his house and continue to be on Viva La Bam. Because we would like go out to a bar after we were filming to eat, like the cast and the crew, right? And you know what that kind of looks like. And we were at a big pub and there's a table of like 30 to 50 people in a pub eating and, you know, talking shit. And he would be like, dude, tell this story, tell that story. And I start to recount a story and you could hear a pin drop. And he's like, dude, you got to write a book. No, to this point, I hadn't graduated high school. I was expelled in the 11th grade as a direct result of my addiction. My resume to that point read, you know, multiple inpatient treatment centers, homeless heroin addict, living on the streets of Baltimore. Bam kind of threw me this golden ticket and pulled me out. And I'm now living with him and he's allowing me to be on MTV, to be on Viva La Bam and, you know, getting paychecks through Viacom and you know, I can live in his house. I can have a credit card. I can drive a car. I can't do heroin or any opiates. I can do like blow and drink.
Oh, wow.
Because that's like sociably acceptable. Mm. And rightfully so. Like if you don't understand that, it just kind of makes sense. And he had no idea what addiction looked like.
How does that work though with the come down from blow, you know, like Xanax and opiates and stuff can really help with like that, right? So if you cut off.
Yeah, it was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
To say the least. I hated it. I loved it because I was an addict and I just always lived to kind of escape my reality.
And you're getting something.
Yeah, anything's better than nothing at that point. To take me outside of myself, which was the whole point of me continuing to use any kind of mind or mood altering substance, was to relieve me from bondage of self and having to look at myself. Right? That's what I avoided at all costs. So, you know, blow and alcohol was socially acceptable. I didn't fall asleep in mid-conversation on them. I didn't steal your wallet. I didn't total your car, overdose in the process. Yeah. So he's like, okay, new rules. You're going to write a book. Here's a notebook and a pen. You're to carry this with you all the time. I don't even give a fuck if you're not writing. Wow. The first time I don't see this in your hand, you're going back to Baltimore.
Damn.
So the scales of justice were very easy to weigh out there.
Yeah,
do I go back to being homeless, eating out of trash cans in Baltimore, or do I carry around this fucking notebook and possibly scratch out a goddamn book? So then I remembered that James Frey, A Million Little Pieces book that I was a big fan of. And I pulled it out and I looked at the outline and it was written in 12 chapters. Mm. So I'm like, okay, I'll write this in 12 chapters. And the outline of his book started with his last day of using and another experience of him coming to on a flight to Minneapolis and his teeth are knocked out. That's how I like books to start. So then I start writing this book and my book starts out with my last day of using at a time way before I got sober. And I did something I swore that I would never do. And I used to make fun of the guys that did it because I grew up in Baltimore City and there was this one particular corner where we would see like homosexual guys standing on the corner prostituting their bodies. And, you know, just being a young, ignorant, naive skater kid, we'd talk shit to everybody and we'd pass by them and we'd talk shit to them as well. And, you know, the world has a way of right-sizing people, or at least me, you know, and teaching me humility. And way later down the road, I was caught between a rock and a hard spot, and I had stolen this furniture one day and no one would buy it. It's like 10:30 at night, and I'm lugging around this cast iron shit, and I'm at that corner, and this car pulls up, and he beeps the horn, and he asks how much for the furniture, and I'm like, you know, $80. I don't want the furniture, but I have $80. And I became that guy that I used to make fun of as a kid. And I you know, total transactional. I traded a sexual act for the money to get the heroin. And that, so my book started like that. And then I get into rehab. But so I pen the paper, I write 12 chapters. While we're filming, you guys are kind of in the industry. You may have heard of a fellow by the name of Joe Franz, who made the CKY videos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that filmed all those. And then went on to film Viva La Bam and the Jackass stuff. He,
I was such a big fan of everything you guys did and that whole world and that whole crew.
Which is why you have a therapist today.
Yeah, all of us, right?
Exactly. The world industry is here.
Yeah, Rodney Mullen, totally.
My friend actually did that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, I think like hearing everything is super powerful and inspirational too, coming from people, you know, you revere and respect and all that. So I think it's a very amazing thing you guys are doing by being so open about it and sharing your stories, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, timing and alignment just kind of met at the perfect opportunity where we were just some young, vulnerable kids and stumbled across the video camera and bam, just totally capitalized off that and filmed everything. And so we, you know, from a young age, being skaters and just kind of defiant and didn't care and did anything for a laugh and just happened to have a camera. So it allowed us to be very, again, transparent. And that carried on over.
Yep.
So I write these 12 chapters and then I'm still in hell. I'm drinking like crazy. I'm doing blow. The only reason why I got hired to be on Viva La Bam is because they had already had the cast, right? Like they had already had the cast set. And then Bam offers me this invite out of Baltimore. And I'm like this weird homeless kid who was on heroin in Baltimore that no one really knew. But Bam and I were like best friends at one point prior to this, just from skateboarding. But, you know, Dunn, Rab, Deco, Rake, they didn't really know me. Like I was Bam's guy.
Okay.
And then one day I just show up on set and I'm like this weird guy that doesn't really fit the mold of what they have going on. And but Bam's totally like, he's gonna live with me. And there was some like reluctance to I guess bring me into the inner circle, which was cool. I totally get that. And as time goes on, I kind of start to find my rhythm and in my own way. And then I'm good. But you know, the producers, they don't want to bring another guy on. They already have like the set crew. And I don't really, it's just weird to them. So, but now Bam insists that I'm in all these shots and I'm his best friend and I live with him. So I fitting that mold of just a drug addict from Baltimore who didn't have much going on. Now Bam kind of calls me as walking TV and I'm just known for being like outlandish, ridiculous. I'm naked most of the time. I'm just doing shit that no one wants any part of. And, the producers and two names I'm just thinking and laughing about were so fed up with me. They were so fed up. And finally, they couldn't control me because I wasn't on payroll, right? I wasn't their employee, so they couldn't tell me what to do. Bam was my boss who let me do anything and loved the craziest shit I did. Yeah. He loved more. So finally, one day, they're like, look, Novak, come on. We have to talk. This is normal. I mean, I remember one scene. We're all out back. And I have like these jeans on, but the ass and the crotch are cut out and I don't have underwear on and I have these biker boots on and I have they cut my hair. So it's like just the top part is skin ball, all like long one length.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to walk out and serve them lemonade on the deck, but I have a skateboard that's covering like my dick. And at that point, the producer, she legit quit for the day. So now Viacom's calling there and she's like, I'm never should ever experience this. And she's like at the top of the food chain.
She knew explain that.
Absolutely disgusted, to say the least. She leaves. Jeez. So the next day they come like, all right, Novak, since we clearly know that we cannot control you, what we're going to do is we're going to offer you a job. We're going to put you on payroll. Mm. But then you have to listen to us. So it was a power, you know, it was right. a strategic play that yeah, worked. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And I went from making nothing, a homeless like heroin addict, to then getting paid, I think it was $4,000 or $5,000 a week at that point.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
You yeah. tell me what to do and I'm there. You want yeah, me to make yeah. sure they fucking behave? I'm Johnny.
You're
on
like,
the
I'm
spot.
Doing this for yeah, free. Yeah. So, yeah.
So real quick, just to finish that story, yeah, yeah, I get yeah. really off track. Sorry.
No, I love it.
Then after I give this to Bam, like a year later, I'm like, yo, I think I'm done. This book, because I always write. I started sniffing a lot of blow and drinking wine, and I really liked to write at that time. It made me very descriptive, and I got really into the process.
I feel like that would help a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It did, until it like got weird, and then I got paranoid and couldn't write, and thought like police were gonna buzz, just crazy shit.
Right, right.
But like a year into it, I'm like, yo, I think I'm done. And he opens up. He's like, this is actually like really good. So he then calls Joe Franz, and says, you have to be his co-author. And Franz is like, dude, please don't give me that position. Like, because my behavior was really erratic and I was like out of my mind and no one wanted to have to like work with me. But Franz, Bam's like, you have to do it. You have to. And then he called his manager, which at the time was Terry Hardy. And Terry Hardy reached out to some literary agents and got me a literary agent, which then, so Franz took my 12 chapters, typed it up, laptop. He's like got letters in front and behind his name. He's like a really intelligent. He was a professor at one point. Mm. So he turned that into like a manuscript and 23 chapters. Then we fucking got it optioned and someone bought it and it did like crazy well. Recently it was revised in its 12th edition.
That's amazing.
Most books that come out don't make it past their first.
Yeah.
So it's like a big deal in the literary world.
That's awesome. Incredible.
Congratulations, man. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys, you know, were a cooler, more rebellious Mr. Beast, right? Like before Mr. Beast, in terms of that group mentality, filming everything, like you said, and doing all that. Do you think that...
You know, it's funny. I didn't know anything about Mr. Beast. And I'm going to stick to the anonymity here. But I have... I've recently helped someone who... personally, you know, in my world of recovery, who did all that, who created that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which was like,
wow.
He's like, wow. You ever heard of? And I'm like, no, what the fuck's that? And so that's all. Yeah.
No, really, that's amazing.
And I had no idea. I still really don't know much about it.
I think that's the great part about that world, too, is, you know, you pay everything forward and you don't even know who you're going to help next, but you do it.
Yeah. Right?
And like Robert Downey had that great speech. About Mel Gibson and how Mel helped him, and then
just
he
like
would
you
help
said
Mel.
In the beginning, you know, like depending on what you see from somebody, if they can do it in a way that you find is appealing enough, maybe it will transmit.
Yep.
If God forbid you fall into a place of hard times,
and they were doing it on stage in front of everyone. You know, Robert was doing it as his acceptance speech, while Mel was like drunk on the side, right?
Yeah.
Like that was such a crazy moment, but like so meaningful. And like, I think just helping other people is huge. But the Mr. Beast comment, I feel like you guys just inspired an entire generation, right? And even the form of filmmaking kind of revolutionized the industry too. And YouTube, which would become the biggest platform. Like it was kind of YouTube before YouTube, right?
I do hear that
a
lot. I'm sure Bam has like a billion times more, but... It's the equivalent, I think, now, like, you see these new YouTubers or rappers that aren't even that big as some of, like, the legendary names.
Yeah.
And the legendaries are, like, fucking trying to figure out how they're going to, like, come up with money to pay for whatever. And you get these guys who are getting views and just, like, burning $100 bills.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. That no one really even knows who they are.
Right, right.
So that's got to be a tough break.
Yeah,
it is what it is. It's just life.
And it's I mean, just over the past 20 years, 10 years, like just entertainment has changed so much on every front. It doesn't matter which way you're looking at it or exactly what you're saying. I see it all the time, dude, like TikTokers that are more famous than you know, major celebrities. And I'm like, who the hell is
and
that
it's just
person?
The housewife that goes to the grocery store and vlogs it or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Like how to like do baby content or something. I'm like, it's crazy, bro.
It is.
It's definitely shifted.
It. It's
no, man.
Right on.
Yeah, to each their own, you know, like, and it's so funny because even the film industry has changed so much. But yeah, but like Will was saying, man, I also grew up skateboarding, man. So like we watched all your stuff. We had a lot of fun and we were all just misfits doing our own thing, man. Like, totally. And that was like part of it though. It's like none of us really fit in anywhere, but mm-hmm. together collectively, we had a family, you know, outside of our families. And it was just, there's something to it that it's just like, and everyone had their struggles, man. And, but we had each other, which was the coolest thing. And then to see what you guys do, you do crazy stuff, right? But then it's pretty amazing seeing the other side of it. You know, some people don't make it out, right? They don't get to the other side. And what you've done with your sobriety and helping people is like, it's eye opening and it's incredible, man. And I'm curious, how long after you got sober did you decide you wanted to go into the intervention professional career path? Or how long were you ready until you're ready to do it?
It's funny, man. I remember being in treatment and you know, my resume prior to that read like multiple inpatient treatment centers, lost count of outpatients and detoxes. Overdoses were a weekly thing. My mother had bought me a plot, which, you know, is still in Baltimore, and you know, a 38-year-old homeless heroin addict. So my resume to that point read that, spliced in with, you know, skateboarder, jackass, Viva La Bam, and author, right? But no high school diploma. I got my GED in the penitentiary. But I remember being in my 90-day inpatient treatment center, and I was assigned this family therapist. Her name was Karen. And Karen called me into her office one of the days closer to my discharge, and she said, okay, what are you going to do when you leave here? Now, my plan was I was going to go to a sober living house for 1 year, something I had never done, just to kind of keep that accountability going. And I said, that's where I'm going. She said, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to, you know, pay for this? I'm like, I don't know, I'll get a job. And she goes, well, what do you want to do? I had no idea, right? Like, because those things that I share with you really didn't give me any kind of tools to like parlay into other stuff.
Yeah.
I wrote a book on pen and paper. I don't know how to type, but I have a laptop, so I can't like, I have no, I got a GED in prison. I can't really like be a writer. So she said, okay, well, what'd you like to do? And she gets on like some app, some job search thing, and lists the qualifications, and I didn't really have any to list. Right. And I'm like, well, I'd like to maybe work in a like a SPCA or a nursing home. She's like, you can't work in a fucking nursing home. She's like, that's, you know, that's, it's a very nice sentiment, but it's fucking sad. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of hospice, a lot of death. It's like, and to work in the SPCA, it's more volunteers. So you can't really pay your way through that. And I'm a 38-year-old guy and I have no direction. Although a lot of people like know my name, So my assistant at the time reached out to this. He looked at the address of where I was going to be living, and then he started calling some, unbeknownst to me, right? Because at this time I was still full with ego, and I had this false sense of pride of, "Don't you know who I think I am?" kind of shit, So he started looking at restaurants in the area, and he found this diner called Marianne's Diner, and he called, and he got me an interview with the owner. And it's funny, the day before I was released, they put me in this little druggy buggy van and they drive me to this job interview. And I'm like proud of this. I'm like, oh, wow, this is really, I remember I had a book in my hand I was reading, and I go to this job interview, you know, feeling like I look really studious, and I'm taken back into this kitchen, and it's just this little diner, and they're fucking, everywhere is a mess. And the guy's interviewing me while the owner, while he's cooking.
Oh, like, wow. Dude,
this is not how I envisioned this to go. I had like, it looked like I was going to court. I had like some khakis on with a button up shirt tucked in. I was like fucking going to kill this thing. And I left that restaurant with a job washing dishes for $6 an hour under the table. Right.
Damn.
And, I had heard the word humility, but I had never experienced it until this. So I'm living in this sober living house. I'm washing dishes at a diner from 4 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Oh, wow.
5 days a week. Barely paying my $165 a week rent. But little did I know at the time that job was going to teach me the fundamentals of life and be one of the best things that ever happened to me. And Joe Franz, he came to me on a visit while I was still in the rehab, and he said, "Don't worry, Novak, this is only temporary." And I didn't know that that was the truth, but I believed in it.
Right.
And for 6 months, I never missed a day of work. I showed up every day. Yeah. I took pride in those dishes. I joined the 15 and over club, where you show up 15 minutes early, you stay 15 minutes late.
Finish Lombardi time.
Yeah, right. You fucking take pride in washing those dishes, and then, you know, I lacked self-esteem. That was apparent. Self-esteem had long disappeared, and I knew that. People told me that, well aware of it, but I didn't know how to get it. Right? Like, if I knew how to get it, I would have fucking done it, and I would have been on my way with this newfound self-esteem. But what happened through showing up every day, while washing dishes with my coworker, who was a 15-year-old kid named Brian, I'm a 30-year-old man who people kind of know, and I'm washing these dishes with Brian, who's 15, for $6 an hour on the table. But I started taking pride, and I started, through washing those dishes, becoming self-sufficient, right? I started paying my own $165 a week rent. Mm-hmm. I started buying my own cigarettes. I smoked at the time. I'd start buying my own groceries. And through those esteemable acts, I started to gain a sense of self-esteem, unbeknownst to me. And I started, like, hold my head up a little bit higher and feeling a little bit more proud and better of who I was and the direction I was headed in. And it had been a long time since I didn't have to rely on anybody to fucking guide me or foot me or the bill. And throughout that process, I remember one day, and I looked at Brian, I said, "Brian, there's gotta be a way that I can work less and make more." Right. And he's like, "Well, what do you want to do?" "Well, I'd like to wait tables." And I'm pretty good with my mouth. I my vocabulary is all right. I like people. And he's like, "Dude, it's impossible." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because at the time I had hair long like yours." Mm. And he goes, "Your hair is too long. Your tattoos are atrocious. And they only have women servers here at this restaurant." And that was true, the women servers. Nonetheless, I keep washing these dishes. And one day, Jimmy comes in. Jimmy's the owner. There's two brothers. Jimmy walks in and he said, "Novak, I want you to know you saved this restaurant's life."
Oh, wow.
And I said, "What the fuck are you talking about, Jimmy?" Yeah. He said, this place was financially sound before I got here, and it will be long after I leave. And he said, "No, what you don't know is that the morale of this kitchen was like below hell low. And everyone knew who you were. And when you came in that day for the job, everyone was betting on how long you'd last back here. And not only did you like make a lot of people lose their bets, they saw the pride that you put into the work and that you showed up consistently, and you raised the morale of this kitchen and like turned this whole back of the house around." And he said, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "I want to be a waiter." And he goes, "Wow. You got it." And I became the first male server ever at that restaurant.
Wow. Yeah.
And I stayed there for 1 year. Yeah. And that day when I left, I gave my 2 weeks in, which I'd never done. The last job I had, I fucking bullied the producer of Viva La Bam to wear clothes and not like, I said, "Jimmy, I have to give my 2 weeks notice." And he goes, "You're going to regret it." Cause I was an amazing employee. And he didn't want to lose me.
Of course.
And rightfully so. And he was nervous, and I do not regret it, trust me. But that job.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And again, those are the blessings that have taken place in my life. They were all unbeknownst to me. Right? Like, just I just had to trust in the process and believe in what people who thoroughly, you know, and had invested interest in me for the right reasons.
That's such a powerful story. Honestly, I freaking love that story. I literally was going to ask, like, I bet Brian was a fan, right? And like, then you kind of finish, and I'm
but the cool thing about that was, so the reason why I didn't gun for that waiter job in the beginning is because my mind was like, dude, if I'm waiting tables, people are going to recognize me, and that's going to be really humiliating. So I'm like, I'll settle with hiding in the back. I can ease my way into that. And then while doing it back there, he may have been a fan, but the volume that we were dealing with was so fucking hectic that like, it didn't fucking matter. It's like, dude, fucking wash these, so that worked for me.
And I think too, like what you said about that, that's such a valuable lesson, right? Going from washing dishes to gaining self-esteem, you know, and that right there is the pathway to success, as people don't realize. It doesn't matter what age you are. It doesn't matter what job it is. It doesn't matter if it's a job or not. You know, like I had no self-esteem growing up, and where I got it was in the gym. Is I learned what I was capable of. I learned I could do more. You know, I started to get confidence in myself and my ability because it was in my hands, you know, of what I could control. And
literally.
Yeah. And it's those lessons that I applied to other aspects of my life. And every little job that I had, I've had some really shitty jobs. I've had, you know, like the 3, 4, 5 a.m. at the bakery, making cookies for hundreds and hundreds of people out of 15, to working at Abercrombie and Fitch was embarrassing as hell for me, dude. But doing working in retail, selling jeans and stuff, just all these random odd jobs. Even doing a trade, you know, like I did air conditioning, and my big ass is up in a tiny little attic. Doesn't make any sense, you know, but I was finding my path, right? Yeah. Finding my way. And every job that I had, I learned something from. Exactly to your point, like showing up 15 minutes early and staying 15 minutes later, that is something that's invaluable. And what I've learned over time is if you give 100% of yourself into something, it will come back to you one way or another. And just like that, you became the first male waiter, right?
Legit.
And then you got self-esteem. And then now Look at where you're at in life too, you know?
And it even goes further than that. So I'm washing these dishes. I'm starting to draw a paycheck. I open my first own checking account. Because it was attached to a woman, right? Because They could kind of keep things afloat.
Yeah,
I could get money. I couldn't keep it.
Yeah.
I could get a house. I couldn't keep a home. So I got my own checking account. And then I started to save money. I started paying rent weekly, then it went to bi-weekly. And then I had never had credit. I didn't have bad credit. I had no credit. So then I got a pre-secured credit card, and then that pre-secured credit card turned into a credit card of like a $500 limit. And then, you know, that continued to snowball into who I am today with, You know, multiple accounts, multiple credit cards, one with no limit. You know what I mean? Like, I was incapable of seeing how far that was going to go, but it just taught me all these lessons that I don't know if I would have learned otherwise without practicing that humility. And thank God I had people that would take that step for me, because my ego and my pride would not allow me to, what I thought, foolish me, to stoop down to something that was beneath me.
Yeah.
Little did I know that thing like saved me.
Yeah. That gave you the foundation to build.
Like it's the foundation of like every piece of success that I have now.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Absolutely.
That's awesome, man. Do you have mentors in your life, or have you had mentors in your life that have made a huge impact, or how important is a mentor, even just a person, you know, a friend, family member, whoever it is, to give you the insight, or even just show up to this job on time, you know, or how important is that?
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything. My mother used to tell me as a child, show me who you walk with and I'll tell you who you are.
Mm.
And that couldn't be any more true in this day and age. But the beautiful thing about me is, so someone inspired me to believe in me in the beginning of my journey. And the funny thing is at that time I was not believing in me. I still didn't have that self-esteem, and I was still in treatment when it was a fellow by the name of Chris Herring. He played for the Denver Nuggets, the Boston Celtics, NBA guy.
Yeah.
He's one of my biggest mentors and dear friends. And whenever I have something heavy, I call him and run it by him now. We've become since close. But at the time I walk into detox of that 90-day program, and I had been really disconnected from reality for a long time. I had been dehumanized, and I was living on this like animalistic level. I just
full survival mode,
legit, just live to use and use to live.
Yeah.
And at that point in my life, you know, if people had to love me from a distance, because like, if you told me you loved me, I equated that to $10 and I got over on you. I robbed you. I lied to you. I stole from you. And we just wash, rinse, repeat that. Until people finally had fucking grown sick of it and said, look, we love you, but from over here, like, don't come. So I had lived like that for a long time, rightfully so. I created that outcome. And I walk into this detox, and I'm not even, I just finished my intake, and I walk in, and they're all watching this fucking screen, and Chris Herring's video is playing. And there's this part in the documentary where his therapist calls him in, and the therapist called him Mr. Basketball. Mr. Basketball, come in here. He walks in. He said, I want you to do me a favor. And Chris said, yeah, what's that? take this phone. And he throws the phone to Chris. And he said, I want you to call your wife. And I want you to do the biggest favor for your family that you ever do. I want you to tell your wife to tell your children that you've been killed in a car accident. Because at this point, he could not stay sober, right? He was a vicious heroin addict, overdoses, just fucking just destroyed everything that came in his path. And the therapist is like, just tell your kids you're dead. Like, let them go. Oh, like, man. Stop taking these. Yeah. And I could relate to that. And I'm like, dude, that's how I feel. Because I always felt like if I just died, life would be so much better for my mother. Right? Like, she could actually be at peace.
Yeah.
And I really wanted her to stop hurting. I fucking did. God knows I did. And I could relate to that. Life would have been better for my loved ones if they just knew that I finally, you know, succumbed to my addiction. And I watched that documentary. And for the first time, I'd say probably in at least a year, I shed a tear. And then all of a sudden, another tear. And then it just fucking opened up. And I just started crying so much in that day room of that detox that I had to walk out. I couldn't even. And I had just cried and cried. And I had started to feel like humanized again.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I realized that although I don't fucking believe in me, I do believe in him. And through believing in him, I then learned how to believe in me. And his story incentivized and motivated me that I too could fucking do it. And that was, so now I have this video that does really well and it plays all over it. It's really preferential in treatment centers and jails and, you know, it's millions of views. And
you're giving back what was given to
you. And people are like, dude, I saw your video. It inspired me. And I'm like, dude, I saw Chris's. Right. It's this video. It's called Tomorrow's Gonna Be a Better Day. It's the fucking crazy views. And I remember I was in Ohio at a speaking engagement. And the guy who was kind of like setting it up, he's like, oh, well, we have 3 hours to kill. There's this guy at this news studio who records people's stories. Do you want to stop by and do it? And I'm like, sure, whatever. And I sat down and did it. And literally it was just in passing. And it turned out to be one of the most powerful things that I've ever put out. Legit. And I was just, it was a time killer.
Wow.
And you can pull it up and see it. It's just me sitting in a chair but timing and alignment, God took advantage of that. And it plays everywhere. And if I could tell you how many people call me a day or my hotline and say, I saw that video, like I need help. And so, you know, that inspired me to do that. And then throughout the rest of my journey, you know, I have probably a handful of people who I rely on like that for like, and then even with opening my new treatment center, Redemption Addiction Treatment Center, I got to a point where things were really good and they flowed very evenly, you know, and there was no issues. Everything was safe. And my shout out to one of my biggest mentors, business partner, Matt Ganim, with Aftermath Addiction Treatment Center in Massachusetts. He was tasked with the position to kind of guide me in the beginning of our relationship when we worked for another organization. He then left that organization to open up his own. And then about a couple of years after it, he was like, what are you doing? Like, you can do better. You can help more. Like, you've made someone else enough money for a long enough period of time. Like, why don't you collect your resources? You've acquired the knowledge. And he saw in me what I didn't see in myself.
Yeah.
And then you know, so those mentors, they're everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
When I'm steering my ship, man, we're fucking going down.
So the Tale of Two Cities lines, I remembered it. It was the best of times and the worst of times, right?
Yeah.
Did you, applying that to your life, do you think, was it harder to enjoy, you know, the great memories of filming and being with your friends and, you know, doing all the shows and movies because of the using and the addiction? Or did you find that now you can kind of look back on it more positively that you're over the hump?
I would say it was all so strategically written by my higher power that I was like, it just blows my mind looking back. And I truly believe that I was blessed with the ability to create this rather big platform that only came by virtue of all those pieces of work, you know, and the Jackass, the Viva La Bam, the Sirius Satellite Radio, the Bam's Unholy Union, the Where the Fuck Is Santa when we went to Finland for, to find Santa Claus, and all this different stuff, where my role was to be just this crazy, you know, drug addict guy who didn't care about anything and did whatever, wherever, with whoever, to then be used for a greater good later on and be saved and blessed with recovery, to now use that platform where I'd gathered the masses from my fucking train wreck appearances to say, like, this is my deal. And if you think that this is something that might interest you, give me a call.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Yeah. So looking back, I wouldn't take it back. I'm so grateful I had the opportunity, and I believe it was done by design.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always, well, it's one, it's like, it's very obviously turning pain into purpose, right? And everything you went through and all the experiences you had, all the information you garnered, all the pain you had, led you to where you're at now, so you can actually help and inspire and change people's life that need it now. You know, and I have this thing I say all the time, you know, which I really adopted a couple years ago, but I always say, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be when I'm supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. You know,
totally.
Yeah. And that for me, honestly, is I'm not where I want to be in my career. I don't know what's it, but it could be that one moment, whether my life sums up to this one moment where I meet this person at the exact moment I'm supposed to and change their life, and then they change 1 million or 100 million or whatever. Mm-hmm. If that's my journey and I don't achieve the things that I thought in my head with my ego that I was supposed to do, then I'm all right with that, you know? Yeah. No matter what that turns out to. So,
and you never know when that experience is going to take
exactly.
place. On tour with the Element guys, right? Kingman passes me along that book. 1 Million Little Pieces. I'm getting loaded at the time. Read the book. Love it because it's about heroin addiction, rehab. Yeah. Later on, I'm presented an ultimatum that I have to write a book or I'm kicked out of the house to go back. So I remember that book. You know, it set off a chain of events.
Yeah.
But today, you know, I'm in a much different place than I was when I was handed that book. And if I knew how it was going to play out, I would have fucked it up.
Mm.
Right? I would have gotten in the way of it. I
would have
sabotaged it. I don't
want to
fucking be sober. I don't want to fucking own treatment centers. And so fuck that. And little did I know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My father, I guess, was right when he used to tell me that I'd fuck up a wet dream on any given day as a child. And that's the truth of the matter. I always, you know, I live by like slogans because I heard them early on in my sobriety. And I heard one that I say to myself often that alludes to what you were talking about being right where you're supposed to be is, rejection is God's protection.
Because
there's a lot of days that I don't get what I want, believe it or not.
Yeah,
and I'm like, and I have to remember, like, no, this is exactly how it's supposed to be.
Yep.
And acceptance is the answer to everything.
Absolutely, man. Amen to that. And it's just in gratitude, too. I feel such a major factor in that. It's
everything.
Yeah. You could drive down the street, get a flat tire, and be pissed all day, let it ruin your day. But that flat tire could stop you from a fatal accident.
One, I think about that. And that's the thing. If you spot it, you got it. If you're on that like frequency.
Yeah.
But there's still days where I'm initially like approaching it with like, what the fuck? I have to pay this bill. I have to go to this appointment. I have this obligation. And my mentor, one of my mentors, they said, if you simply change the word have to get, it will change your perspective.
Yeah.
I don't have to get a flat tire. I get to get a flat tire.
Yeah.
Because I have a fucking car.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of people don't. Exactly. You know, it's however you want to frame that.
Yeah.
But I too, you know, like I get a red light and I'm like, all right, I'm pissed. I'm late. But maybe like someone was about to blow that one and hit me head on if I would have fucking ran. Whatever.
Yeah. But it's that mindset shift. Dude, it
and I didn't think like that until like was placed around people that thought like that.
Yeah.
Going back to your mentors, left to my own devices, I think you did that to me.
Yeah.
And then what my reaction was for so long is I'm going to go shoot dope at you. Because you fucking did this to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to drink poison at you.
Right.
I'll show you. That's the way that I was wired for a long time.
Have you read any Eckhart Tolle, like The New Earth or Power of Now?
Yeah. I actually have The Power of Now in my book right now. When I leave here, I'll go hang out by the pool at the Roosevelt and read my book.
That's awesome, bro.
I freaking love that.
And then the Fifth Agreement, which I have too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's the four agreements.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I just came across the Fifth Agreement the other day, which I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, and he reads his own audiobooks and has that amazing voice. Like, I'll do it before bed all the time and just kind of fade away with those thoughts. I have the Love and Do What You Will from The New Earth right there, where, you know, St. Augustine, 395 AD, where Rome was taken over by barbarians. And it was kind of the westernization of the church, where it's like, the buildings aren't your faith is internal. And that kind of led to Protestantism and all that. But I really do believe that, you know, love and do what you will. If everything's stemming from a place of love, it's all about your intention.
Yeah.
And, you know, that book, those books have taught me so much about ego and myself and ego and others.
All ego is just easing God out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now I become God. I am the great I am.
Yep.
Right? And now you owe me because look what I did for you. It's like, yeah. What the fuck is.
That's why I think Eckhart can be really helpful for people in recovery, because it's all about the, you know, the higher power and ego and like you just
everything.
Said, getting that out of there.
Everything.
Yeah.
That's, you know, for so long, I had this internal void, right? That I was always trying to fill. So I was trying to fill this internal void with this like external solution.
Mm.
And it always came by virtue of money, property, prestige, pussy. And no matter how much of that I put into this whole, it wouldn't suffice. It still felt like less than adequate. And then I would get those things and it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
What's going on? And then what happened ultimately at the end, the last thing I tried, which was the first thing that ever worked, I did the work internally first. And when I did the work internally, finally I received the external results I always desired. So it had to be backwards.
Yeah.
And that came by way of working the 12 steps in my 12-step program. And I had a spiritual experience. And the definition of a spiritual experience is a psychic change, right? So what that means now is, I, Brandon Novak, today no longer look at things the way I did then. I have a completely different perspective on life. And I've acquired enough knowledge to understand like what I can control, what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And what is that? That's me. My thinking, my attitude, my behavior. That's all I have control over. The moment I place an expectation on you, all I've done is set myself up for an unfulfilled resentment.
Absolutely.
Why? Because not you, not him, not the dog, not me will ever live up to my own standards. I will always let me fucking down, and so will you.
Mm-hmm.
So the sooner I understand that all I have control over in this world is me, it's easier for me to navigate through without being a fucking old, bitter, resentful man, which ultimately then I end up fucking shooting dope or drinking wine at you because you fucking make me angry.
And they always say too, like something like 90% of the evil in the world stems from an unfilled need or an unfilled want, right? Not need, want, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But essentially, like, you look at someone like Hitler or whatever, and he, like, didn't get what he wanted, so he went on a rampage, right? Stuff like that.
It's because, you know, any given day, I can wake up, I do, and it's either, like, don't you know who the fuck I am? Or, please, God, don't ask me who I am. You know, I'm always trying to find this balance because there's a need or a want going on.
Right.
And then when I like take an honest evaluation of my surroundings, where I'm at, who I'm with, am I happy? Am I full? Do I have a roof over my head? Do I have, you know, am I healthy? Like, then I realize like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. How did you get to that point of introspection and then allowing yourself to
fucking pain?
Yeah.
Pain has been the motivating factor.
Yeah.
That's been the only thing that would ever dictate any form of change.
Yeah.
Pain.
Well, that's what they say with success. I mean, you look at all these major mentors, the Tony Robbins, the, you know, whoever it is, that's the thing that's going to force you to change. It's pain versus pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. It's you have to be in enough pain to make that change
totally.
And then move on forward from there. Otherwise you're just going to keep spinning that hamster wheel. You're going to make the same mistakes over and over. It's just, And that's the thing. It's exactly what we said. It's backwards. We are, I think, wired as humans to be backwards. When you break down the pain versus pleasure module, it's temporary pleasure, you know, eating a piece of cake, you know, doing the drugs, getting a drink.
All the shit that my brain wants to do.
Exactly. Immediately. Because you get immediate gratification. And then you get long-term pain. Uh-huh. If we can settle or put it in our minds to do the temporary pain, which is don't do that drink, don't eat that thing, go do the fucking workout.
That
we don't
want to. Norm.
Yeah. Then you get the long-term pleasure.
Exactly.
Which is where you're living now, right?
And that's the spiritual experience.
Yeah.
Right? I had to fucking do that internal work.
Yeah.
The thing that I always did exact opposite of and would buy a house, get a girl, get an account, get a check, whatever, a car. What I was talking about it yesterday, and I read this not too long ago. The magic that we're in search of is in the work that we're avoiding.
Mm. It's in
the work that we're Think doing. About that.
Yeah.
Do I want to go to the gym? Fuck no. Right? Do I want to eat dessert? Absolutely. Do I want to wake up early? No. Do I want to sleep? Yes.
Yeah.
All that shit that is not good for me. Yeah. My brain's like, go.
Avoiding. I love that.
I love that. Think about that in any area of your life.
Yeah. Like I was watching your Steve-O podcast and, I think Steve-O was on one, but he basically said, when you're, the rock bottom is when you stop digging.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's such a simple statement.
It is.
And it hit me so fucking hard.
But we overlook that.
Right.
Because as humans, we overcomplicate the most simplest of processes. What I was just talking about, you know, like the love of everything, right? It can never be that simple. It's always got to be, but what's the cost of it? Where does it come from? Who made it? What is it? Is it pretty? Does it smell good? It's like, fuck, it's just love.
Yeah.
Like, simmer down.
I have this company, it's a fitness app, but I named it Discipline because I really wanted to find what is the root, you know, reason that we do things, you know, that we show or to actually be successful at something. And discipline, almost by definition, you know, obviously it's doing things that you don't want to do that it's going to garner the result that you do actually want, but it's the highest form of self-love. It's the discipline to get up early, right? It's the discipline to make that choice, make the hard choice, the pain choice.
That
you know?
Is the definition of it?
It's a form. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A form of definition. That's how
I've become a really disciplined person.
Yeah.
Because before that psychic change, I was not figure. Right.
Like, yeah.
I do whatever, whenever, wherever, with whoever, forever. Yeah. And now I'm like really regimented. I'm really disciplined. And my life's gotten better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's Jocko Willink, right? He has the book. It's Discipline Equals Freedom. And when you really break it down, you're doing all the hard shit all the time, but you're free at the end of it, right? You're not succumbing to all of these temporary pleasures, these you know, choices that actually end up hurting yourself long term. So being able to get to that point of gratitude and discipline, and all the stuff that you're doing right now, all the stuff you're helping other people do, that is where we live, where we thrive, you know, and if we're not a prisoner to our own mindset, you know what I mean?
Which is where the prison exists.
Yeah.
This is the problem for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? This is my problem was never the drinking or the drugging. That was not the problem at all. The heroin, the cocaine, the Xanax, the wine. That's not the problem. It's the solution to the problem. The problem is the thinking, the attitude, and the behavior that always takes me back to my solution.
Yeah.
And then I had to fucking figure out, well, if shooting heroin and cocaine and drinking wine is the answer, then what the fuck is the question? Right? And then I had to I didn't understand that I was learning any of this until I was at a place to comprehend what was being given to me.
Because,
you know, the opportunity and it just didn't align.
Exactly.
The
timing.
And it doesn't matter until you align.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
You're not
I'd
ready
probably
to receive
heard it a
it.
Million times.
Yeah, yeah.
But one day I was at the appropriate place and the appropriate person was tasked the position to deliver the same thing I'd heard.
Yeah.
But it landed and I listened. And that's what I learned is that it's the thinking is the problem.
Yeah. It's that. Go ahead.
Oh no! Yeah, I was just saying my therapist always says have happy feet, right? So if you're saying, am I going to go to the gym? Just have your feet lead you, and just boom, just do it, right? Like don't think about it too much. Just do it.
I always say the less I think, the better I do. Mm. Think less, do more.
Yeah.
And you were talking about too on another podcast.
Even coming here, I'm like, I was fucking laying in my hotel room and HLN, one of those series came on and I'm love cults and I'm like falling asleep. I'm like, dude, this is sick. I could just chill and
of course.
And my brain will talk me out. I'm like, dude, fuck, what do you know, anything.
100%.
There's this quote I love too, man. It kind of reminds me of this and everything you've been saying too, but it's life isn't what happens to us. It's how we react to it. So our reactions to every single thing that happens, the fender bender that you get pissed at, right? And then the guy pulls out a gun or does whatever, like, or if you react in a positive light, you know, your life is saved and it only makes things better. So it's getting to that mindset too. Like all of these things that you're saying become the sum of being whole and fulfilled. And the Jim Carrey, like I love quotes too, man. I'll quote shit all day, but he's like, you know, I wish that everyone could be famous and rich. So they could see that it's not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That hole void you're trying to fill, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm always been my whole life, seeking the highest version of myself, but also what's the root cause of my issues? You know, what are my problems? Where's my depression come from? Where does it stem from? Why am I overthinking everything? Like where and how do I change that?
Yeah.
Do I need to go? I've learned that I really need to go camping and take my damn shoes off for a week and check out for a little bit, you know, because that reconnection for me is everything, you know, but finding ways to do that in my day to day too is a game changer. And what do I do daily? What are my habits every single day?
The behaviors.
Exactly. Yeah.
So until I was at the appropriate place mentally to comprehend that, I was ignorant to all of it.
Yeah.
Right. So it made sense for me to continue to live the way I lived because why would I not? That's the norm.
Yeah.
The abnormal had become my normal.
You got the comfortable in chaos.
And then the pain, the appropriate amount of pain was delivered on my day, which was May 25th, 2015, where I had done something I had never done, which was ask for help, follow through with the suggestions given, take advantage of the opportunity. And then what I started to do was acquire this information, this knowledge. So ignorance is no longer bliss.
Yeah.
I'm now armed with the facts. I'm accountable for these actions.
Yeah.
Right. I know what I know. I can't forget what I know.
Yeah.
And I had to get into a place where they had to help me uncover the problem so I could discover the problem. If there was ever any hope for me to recover from the problem.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Because prior to that, it was like, fuck yeah, we flip this table, we cut lines out, we sniff blow, and then we go shoot a speedball, and then we figure out, I didn't even know that that was a problem. You know what I mean? There's so many layers.
Yeah.
And without the blessed people that were placed in my life, I wouldn't have experienced or understood them or benefited from them.
Listening to all this too, man, so many people have been in the position that you were in, right? And then, like you mentioned earlier, you said, you know, your family, you thought that they'd be better off with you dead, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I've personally experienced that too in my own life, and I've seen it with friends and family as well. Do you have any insight or advice for family members that have someone who is an addict or is struggling to find a way to help them? Because it's always such a struggle with communication and understanding and what that person's going through. And it's all, there's no blanket answer, right? It's all very individual with
circumstances. And that's the difficult thing with this world that I live in, which is harm reduction and recovery. And it's like there's no margin for error, yet it's impossible to do perfect.
Yeah.
Right? Because no one has the answer. We're all trying. I'd like to believe we're all trying our best with genuine intentions to create the best outcome for the individual.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is, but I know what my experience was. And what worked for me might not work for you or her or them. But my experience was I was the guy that was destined to die with a needle in his arm. People had given up and loved me from a distance a long time ago. And I was the one that no one believed would ever not only get sober, but stay sober. And I think because of, you know, the public spotlight that I had and the roles that I played and the opportunities that were given, it was such a viewed thing that little did I know what was a defect then was going to become my asset today. Because people now view that and they're like, fuck, if that guy can get it, then there's no reason why I can't. And they reach out. And what I say is that, like, for me, I was never going to change until there were repercussions for my actions. Mm. Right. And what I know now is I was simply being divinely inconvenient. But at the time, I just thought things were happening, you know, to me, not for me. Mm. I was so consumed by the mess, I was incapable of seeing the message, that saying. And my experience is that my mother, at 19, I came home to her house where I live with her in Baltimore City. And there was this big glass door. And I knocked I put the key in the lock and the key didn't work anymore. And that was a common theme in my story, is that locks would stop working. So on this particular day, the lock stops working. I knock on the door and my mother's crying and I see her through the glass door. She's like, "Brandon, I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. You have to go." And now at the time I was like, how fucking dare you? My father was a crack addict. He died from his addiction. So of course I immediately reverted to, well, if you didn't marry my father and have a kid with me, I wouldn't turn out like him. Yeah. Now it's your fucking fault. You know, spiteful shit I was spewing. But what those acts saved my life, right? Because it then set off a chain of events of me being homeless, and where some people would be like, how could you kick your son out of the house at 19? How could you turn your back on him? What she did was she was creating healthy boundaries for herself and me.
It's easy to judge from an outside perspective, you know? Yeah.
So my long-winded answer to your short question is like, to create boundaries, find your tribe. With specific that genre, you go to Al-Anon meetings, where those are for like families of loved ones who are in addiction, and where they can come together and they work their own 12 steps. Like we work ours in our 12 step recovery meetings.
Oh, wow.
So find your people, man. And they're all over. But I would definitely start by creating healthy boundaries.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, and then, and like you're saying too, that mindset shift of, you know, one, it applies to the boundaries for sure, but it also is taking ownership. Mm-hmm. You're not blaming everyone else for your problems anymore, right? Now I'm causing this. Everything that I do is a result of my life. The way I think is a result of why I live the way I do.
For sure. Which once you then realize that, then you can actually fix the outcome.
Yeah.
Right? Because
you change the...
Because that's what
way
we
you show up in the world. Yeah, exactly.
Again, the moment I start expecting you to do or think or say a certain thing, I'm fucking going to be angry because you're not going to.
You're setting both of us up for failure.
Yeah. And you're not going to listen to me. Yeah. I can't make you do anything. But what I can control is my reaction to your action.
Yeah.
Right? The same thing we were just talking about.
Hell yeah.
Changes everything, man.
I'm a big fan of a lot of the other podcasts you've done. And I would love to ask you kind of about those experiences and about this kind of new landscape of media. Do you think like things like YouTube and social media are harmful or positive when it comes to getting out a message and reaching people, or how do you feel about it and what are the pros and cons?
I feel the answer to that question just depends on who you're asking, if it's harmful or helpful. What are my intentions, right? Am I getting on to look up how to build a bomb and send it to my ex-girlfriend's house? Or am I getting on to look up a recovery video because I'm sick and I'm addicted and I just need some inspiration or motivation to not kill myself? So I think it's, you know, the yin to the yang as far as that. What I love about the podcast is they'll live forever, right? Like, this today I could walk away and it might not affect anybody, but then you opportunity and alignment and this one kid somewhere in Ohio at 4 a.m. who just doesn't see another way out might stumble on this because I don't know, you know, like
it's like your book in the 12th round, right?
Legit. So I'm a big fan of it. And then with podcasts specifically, some have better vibes than others. This one has a really good vibe. It's good energy in this room. I thoroughly enjoy talking to you. So I'm like really in it.
Yeah.
And the audience is very, you know, like who might listen to yours might not listen to the other one I did yesterday, which was a real estate guy, you know. But my specific topic that I specialize in doesn't discriminate, right?
Yeah.
Addiction, recovery, it doesn't understand age, weight, creed, religion, lack of religion, fucking accounts, homes, no homes, Beverly Hills, fucking Compton. You know, so my message, my talk is universal. So I can't really go wrong.
And I think it even applies to people who don't have addiction issues, right? It's diving into the mindset and how we are as people, how we show up in the world, right? So it's not just one lane, right? But that is a very specific lane that will help a lot of people. But
and thank God you said that, because a lot of people will cast out, well, I'm not a drug addict, I'm not an alcoholic, I can't relate to this. But if you listen through, that's not what we were talking about. We're talking about the behaviors that lead.
Yeah,
yours could be porn, mine could be
exactly
shopping.
Yeah.
Gambling.
We all numb in our own ways, legit. Right? You could be watching movies all day.
Totally.
Yeah. It's what is that thing for you, yeah. and why are you doing that thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And awesome. The habits to get over it, right? Like the change, the shift in consciousness mm-hmm. that you talked about, right? That I love discussing because, you know, Einstein would talk about it, Eckhart would talk about it, that shift in consciousness. That's the most important thing. And we could all benefit from it for sure.
And the rad thing about it, it all came to me the moment I just admitted two things, defeat and that I had no idea about what I thought I knew.
Right.
Because yeah. then it made me moldable. It made yeah. me teachable, you know?
Open to the change. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Open-minded.
I think there's a saying, it goes like, the moment you think you know everything, you know nothing.
Yeah. And yeah. The longer I stay sober, the more work I do internally with my spirituality and the journey I go on, the older I get.
Yeah.
The more I know, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Which is really nice and freeing because now I don't feel like I'm in control of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't have to dictate, like, fuck, I got to be here then because they're going to be waiting. And if they're going to be pissed, I'm like, dude, just fucking chill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's going to be, the process is going to be all right. It's going to play out how it's supposed to.
Absolutely. Not in charge. Amen to that, man.
Congrats on the 9 years, by the way.
Thanks, dude. I'm grateful.
This month. And,
I'm grateful. Real grateful.
Yeah, we're chilling. I want you to get to that poolside book reading, bro.
This was cool, man. Really, really enjoyed this.
I appreciate it. So do we, man, dude. It's fucking awesome to meet you. Grateful to have you on. Thanks for everything you shared, everything you've done, man, everything you've overcome. Like,
yeah.
Thank you, bro.
Hey, if anybody out there is in a place that might need some guidance, you know, they can reach out to me directly at 610-314-6747. That's connected to my treatment center, Redemption Addiction Treatment Center. Go to my website, BrandonNovak.com. That'll take you down all my holes.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's awesome, bro. We'll put links in there and everything and help spread the word, man.
Love you, boys.
All right. Love you too, bro. Appreciate you, man.
Cheers.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for tuning in to Studio 22.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Old Man. The hit show returns, starring Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow. The former CIA agent sets off on his most important mission to date, to recover his daughter after she's kidnapped. The stakes get higher, and more secrets are uncovered. FX's The Old Man premieres September 12th on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Nothing will fit into your day better than a Fit Crunch bar. Fit Crunch baked bars are chef-inspired from Robert Irvine and made with 6 layers of deliciousness. With 16 grams of protein and 3 grams of sugar, Fit Crunch is the perfect snack, whether it's at school, midday at work, or when you're on the go. Visit FitCrunch.com and use promo code RADIO15 for 15% off your FitCrunch.com order or find a retailer near you. Check out FitCrunch.com today. That's FitCrunch.com, promo code RADIO15.
Is getting gas at Chevron burning a hole in your wallet? What if I told you can easily earn cash back while you fill up? Introducing Drop, the app that turns every fill up into a reward. With Drop, you'll earn points to get free gift cards every time you fill up your tank. Download Drop and use code DROP77 to instantly receive $5 in points to jumpstart your savings journey. Don't miss out on turning your gas expenses into something rewarding.